Welcome to Whistleblowers. I'm Greg Kerr. With me is Jennifer Stone. And we're going into some murky territory this week. Episode 12. Organized crime and police corruption.
Criminal money flows. We are prioritising our understanding of cybercrime threats to Australia and initiating response strategies with law enforcement, intelligence and industry partners. We are also working with police and law enforcement agencies nationally and internationally so we can better understand and respond to organised crime impacting Australia. To find out more, read the Organised Crime in Australia report.
There we go. We've got the government telling us that they are doing their best to curb the incidence of organised crime. Well, any investigative journalist, author or writer that's been following this topic for years will tell you that's all just the glossy marketing. Alive and well, bigger than ever in New South Wales, Australia, the wider Australian community and certainly internationally is this very murky territory of police corruption. And with me is Jennifer Stone. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to see you again. You've been busy this week researching, and this is a topic that we often talk about. You wanted to call this episode Organised Crime, The Pattern. Can you just help us out a little bit and start with the bigger picture, and then we might go into some specifics?
Well, the pattern, organised crime, how the big guys get away with it for so long. Allegedly, the police allow it because otherwise they'd be busting down doors. So there's a part in the New South Wales Police Act that's under 141A of the Police Act, no further investigation. So a police can open a file, can look at the evidence and then just cross it out and say under 141A, no further action, and that is allowable by the law. That law needs to change, and it's one of the laws that I've been trying to get changed and to bring to people's attention, but it seems quite hard to get this to get changed because, yes, there are some cases, but I believe in organised crime, they've got to exhaust all avenues. They've got to keep going until there is no leads further to follow. But under this act, it allows you to stop the investigation. So if you think about it, in John Ibrahim's book, he wrote about alleged police corruption. 5 to 6 police in each station. Now, if that's right, well, that's still, you know, more than the 1% of the police force could be allegedly corrupt. So there's 25 police stations. So under Mick Fuller, they've cut down the number of police stations. So allegedly we're down now to 25. So 5 to 6. We're only looking at 100 to 200 coppers that allegedly could be corrupt. But remember, they've all got to have the power to be able to close a file and also be able to steer the constables away. They don't know anything about this system. Now, they're key players. I actually put it down to the crime managers and I kept going back to King's Cross and linking into that system because that's what I had been studying. And the crime manager, in that position, there are 3 crime managers at the station that work the 24-hour shift 7 days a week. So the 5 to 6 that John Ibrahim was talking about was more than what I could figure out. So those crime managers send out the police cars, they send out the foot patrols, then they know where a dealer's working out of and they might put up on his file, which I did find happen, so a particular thug's name, You bring it up on the system and big writing across the screen came up, do not pick up. And then when they go back and I pushed to figure out why this known drug dealer was never picked up, the detective was unnamed. It just said a detective had done it, but no detective's name. So I put it in to higher up. So that's what I used to do. When I found a system that was broken, trying to bring it up at a higher level. So the police link into the police professional standards. I had many debates with them. Even my husband at the time had many debates with them. But they kept referring it back to 141A of the Police Act. The police have the right to terminate any investigation.
Okay, and that is a great start to today's podcast. And, you know, by definition, police corruption is a form of police misconduct in which law enforcement officers end up breaking their political contract and abuse their power for personal gain. This type of corruption may involve one or a group of officers. And internal police corruption is a challenge to public trust, cohesion of departments and human rights and legal violations. Police corruption can take many forms, as Jennifer has just mentioned. Now, this topic is bigger than both of us and we could spend weeks talking about it, but we're starting at the top and we're in New South Wales, Australia, and you're talking about these patterns which you have drawn on certain aspects of mythology from different cultural backgrounds. And it seems like it's a evolutionary process. The circle goes around and around, and some of these patterns and networks and systems have been inherent in all cultures in modern times anyhow. What can you tell us about the patterns?
Well, the patterns, when I started to look at the drug links, I started doing research on the drug lines of old. So the Woods Royal Commission, Abe Saffron, Tilly Devine. So where the drugs were coming from originally. So they were coming out of China, Southeast Asia, where it was known as the Golden Triangle, linking to an ex-copper, but at the time he was a police officer, I think, who had a flying aircraft, and he would fly up to the Golden Triangle, load up his plane with heroin and fly back into Northern Territory, land near a pub, have some beers, and a plane would fly up from Sydney to do his pickups. Now, he did get caught, and I believe he's an honest man now, but he actually told me about it because he had been caught, and he actually said this was a system that worked for many years, but he linked into a system that was linking into Roger Rogerson, and he was in court to see Roger Rogerson go down. So, but it had taken many years, you know, 20, 30 years later. So he had left the police force and was running for the shipments, and that's the time of the Nugan Hand Bank and the money that they were looking for, and the CIA linking into King's Cross. So it was a very volatile time.
And you've attended a lot of court cases, and this obviously fueled your enthusiasm for investigating more once you'd met somebody that gave you solid evidence that this network was brought down. But did he give you any other indications or other court cases and convicted and alleged people that have gone before the magistrate that might have given you information, have told you that these systems exist today, and maybe give us a bit of an idea of in what form does the same thing happen today?
Well, today the files will come up on a computer. Do not pick up. In the day of when Clive Small was at the police station, and on a manual system, the guys had three little dots beside their name in red pencil, or a red pen and a triangle. Now, remember, it was the golden triangle where they were getting the heroin from, and a triangle is the same shape as a pyramid, and that's how the cells work. So it was interesting, and the guy that told me about it was about 70-odd. He had spent a lot of time in prison. He was now reformed. He was helping other people when they got out of prison, and he said to me, "You missed this whole system." So it showed you that there was someone high up in the police that could go through all the files and put this little triangle symbol beside the name, and that meant don't touch them. But how would you know? It may only have been on 20 guys. It might have only been on 50 guys in New South Wales, but it was a system that was working here.
It's wonderful information for the general public, and both of us are just lay people who are putting together a podcast out of personal interest and mainly your research, but in other podcasts that are becoming more and more popular to do with crime. Organised crime is a particular episode or subject that intrigues the public, because a lot of the information, we might say, feels like it's hush-hush. And in one podcast I've been listening to recently, we're listening to ex-cops, you know, stars of the service, people that have dedicated their 40 years to the service. And there's some really good police work going on in our communities, no doubt, you know. But, you know, again and again, these police say it's all about perception. It's all about doing enough in the public's eye to make mum and dad feel like they're safe to go home overnight and the community safe enough for them to live in. They don't really want to know much more than that, the general public, until they meet people like you, Jennifer Stone, until the investigative journalist goes and probes and we find out there's a lot of hush-hush going on in the system. And I guess a lot of police would listen to what you've got to say, or politicians, and say that, you know, that doesn't exist, you know, or we don't want to know about that, or that's a load of codswallop or whatever. But it does seem like when you speak to ex-convicted criminals that the systems are in place, and people that go right to the top, the silent Australians, the quiet Australians, as ScoMo might call them, or even politicians or ex-police, there's certain things they don't want us to know, and maybe that's for our own good, but then when it comes down to police corruption, it's not good.
No. Well, at the time, police corruption was starting to get exposed was when the call for the Woods Royal Commission. But the police public were calling for Ivan Milat to be arrested into the backpackers murders once they realised there was a serial killer out there. But the serial killers work by a pattern. And many of the serial killers, they'll do 8 murders themselves. I'm not saying that there are people out there. But what I was finding was a pattern that linked not to one murderer, but the pattern linked to a system that a drug controller who was handing out the drugs was utilising to control the puppets. And I thought that was horrific what I'd found. And I kept sending it to the police and saying to them, this is a pattern. And they eventually told me my emails were intelligence for them. Some of it, like, I'd send them about a drug dealer and, you know, and I'd say to them, they get out of prison and they're back on the streets, they're getting a kilo of heroin to start off their business again. Hang on, where's he getting his money from to buy that kilo? But asking around, it was a system. When they went into prison, they were good guys, sold a lot, they'd get their heroin for free to start off with.
And look, if you've got a system and it's making you a lot of money, you don't want that system to change. And so in parts of the world now, the dosage of different drugs is now being prescribed and regulated, like alcohol was done after Prohibition. And many are advocating for that exact thing to happen with some of the other drugs. But it's being resisted strongly by many, many groups, and particularly police, right-wing religious groups and politicians, you know, this very narrow-minded and old hat view of the world, where we see corruption running rampant, we see drug use running rampant, but we have a media and sections of the media. I call them 9GB, you know, Channel 9 and 2GB have linked up now, and without naming names, but if you want a particular topic pushed, you'll go on to 9GB and say that we're winning the war on drugs and that drug use is down and organised crime is down. And the quiet Australians will believe the people that go on to these programs. They believe that, like we hear in these podcasts, enough is being done. We don't want to know about any of this investigative journalist stuff. In fact, they want to start arresting investigative journalists. They want to start raiding journalists' homes because it sounds like those that are protecting the system, the patterns, whether they know it or not, you know, their lifestyle is at threat. And interesting, police corrupt acts can form in a number of ways. You know, corruption can be things like extortion, burglary, theft, shakedowns, fixing, internal payoffs, perjury, the frame-up, even ticket fixing. Corrupt behaviour can be caused by behavioural change of the police within a department subculture. The subculture is a group of individuals within a culture that share the same attitudes and beliefs. What have you learned over the years about this psychological paradigm to and the sociological paradigm to police and the culture within subcultures within the police network?
Well, the subcultures, okay, a corrupt copper. If you think you found one and you start naming it and you go to the police professional standards and say, hey, this is a system that's been not exposed fully, they keep stopping investigations, well, their system goes, oh, we refer it back to that police station. So you may report about a corrupt copper, it goes to police professional standards. They head the research back to the inspector or who's in charge of that police station to head an investigation. They then get a detective or somebody further down under them to do it. So it's all in-house. The police are investigating themselves in the same police station.
It's a very interesting topic, police investigating police, and we've seen it in recent times in the New South Wales parliamentary and federal politics where police from one side of politics, in this case the right wing, you know, side of politics, have had a right wing political policeman come out and say, all good here, nothing to see, these guys are not, you know, we're... You know, Blind Freddy sitting back watching investigative journalism would say, well, a crime's been committed, but nobody's been held to account, not even been dismissed. And this pattern seems to be getting stronger. So it almost seems like the public's become comatose through media outlets like 9GB. I don't mind naming 9GB. It's called 2GB, but it's now Channel 9 and 2GB promoting this culture of the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer, but pretending to be on the battler's side. And the poor old battler is unable to access the type of information that you're talking about and others and in various forms of the media. And they're led to believe that anyone that, you know, is against the police, in this case against corruption, is not to be listened to. So it's a difficult one because, as we know, the prevalence, accurate information about police corruption is very hard to come by. You could vouch for that. The information is very hard to come by unless you're passionate like you are.
Yes, but I'm unthreatening too. I'm just a woman. And that's what I think has allowed people to talk to me because they don't realise that women do have brains, they do have intelligence. The pen is mightier than the sword, but you got to be wary about the gunshots because they could wound and hurt. And there's many guns running around in our society today. Yeah, so it's quite... the corruption's happening because the big boys never come down.
Mm.
And for people to say, oh, they're doing massive drug busts and stopping it, but you've got to say, okay, you've stopped that drug network, but tomorrow there's another one. And what I noticed in my patterns, it was if the guy was doing the drug deliveries good into Australia, he would get caught on his third drug network. Now, he'd get two across and the third one, but that kept it silent, the corruption. So, and a lot of the time, it was a tip-off, you know. And when you notice some of these drug dealers that had got caught, and Bali 9 is one of them, it was a tip-off from AFP. But the main drug dealer here in Australia that organised it all, he won Lotto or something. So he got his money anyway. And then I started to think, God, how did he do that? You know, and you start, your mind's questioning questions, and you start to realise, hang on a minute, this is not a whole system corrupt. There's only a little bit. So maybe he did win Lotto. But there's a lot of major drug dealers that have won large amounts of money like that after their networks have come down.
So we've gone for 20 minutes here and we don't want to start boring people, but it's an interesting topic and we may come back to it again next episode or the one after. We might talk about some smaller versions of police corruption. But throughout the world, China, Pakistan, Malaysia, Russia, the Ukraine, Brazil, Mexico, I could go on. Police corruption remains to be one of the largest social problems facing these countries. We do live in a very tolerant and peaceful society here in Australia. We live on an island. We're doing our best with coronavirus. And the police, the young ones that join the force, they're doing a good job. But there's other elements at play. It must be very disheartening for a young, motivated police person to come in and see and experience some of this corruption. You mentioned property developers. You mentioned politicians, you mentioned influencers. It really is a hard, solid personality that can stay in the police force for decades. So I do take my hat off to them. But nevertheless, we need to question illegal activity. What are these other influences like and how do they fit into the pattern?
Well, okay, allegedly, I'll have to say allegedly, but we now have police testing police for drugs, like steroids and cocaine and that.
Police? Drug testing police. So if I have a stimulant problem or a steroid problem or even an alcohol problem, my colleague will be testing me.
Yes. And I think it's earmarked at 4,000 tests in a year now. But that's been a change that's come in over the last couple of years. Because I saw guys who changed from a size medium, say, in a men's T-shirt to extra, extra large on the muscles. And I thought, how did that happen? And it was within like a couple of weeks in some cases. Some of them would be 6 months. Impossible to get so many muscles on them. You know, and that's the thing. That's a payoff. Because steroids are quite dear. A vial of steroid, and I'd done a bit of research on this, a vial of steroid they were selling in Glebe at the time was $1,000. Mm. And it was getting prescribed by a doctor out at Bondi Way. So it was quite a complex. A doctor out at Bondi and you go and pick up your steroids at Glebe, you know. You started to think, how did that happen? Yeah.
And Jennifer and I are both aware of the seriousness of the issue of mental health and, you know, underpinning a lot of this activity. We do have to remind our listeners that the subject of mental health is very important, whether you're on the light side of crime or the dark side of crime. And so in the case of police, you know, the footage we've been watching online recently, we are fully aware that, and I can't imagine what it must be like shift after shift, day after day for police, particularly young people who have just left school or been through university, coming face to some of the traumas that they have to deal with. You know, other people with mental illness, people who are severely addicted to stimulant substances and their behaviours. It's a life and death. So we do understand that a lot of police are affected by the job, similar to our correction staff who do their best. But nevertheless, when a police person at the bottom level or higher up commits a crime, we can't overlook that.
No, because that one copper who's turned a blind eye, it could be a major drug network working behind the scenes that's worth millions to billions. In Australia, there's 30 to 50 billion a year, Clive Small estimated when he was in the police force. Now, that's a huge amount of money. Even if it was now, we're still, though they've done lots of busts, they are still estimating it at that sort of, price range for Australia, because the drugs are worth so much here. So, like, 4 containers a year of cocaine they're talking about go through our system, and they test it by the urine, like by the wastewater. Mm. So they know that it's still getting through. And even though we're in the coronavirus system, we would have expected, under the system I was exposing, containers in April, and the next lot of containers will come in the long weekend in October. So they've had plenty of stock. They haven't really been affected, because I'm sure they knew to bring it over earlier than April, Easter. And Easter was in March this year. So it was, it runs from, one long weekend to another long weekend, so the police can turn a blind eye for the containers to be moved. And the ports are busy and can't get through enough containers. So this major network that I've been trying to expose has not ever come down.
It's interesting. And we're going to finish this episode up. Jennifer can talk more about police corruption in the next episode. But where corruption exists, the widespread existence, as you just said, it's called the blue code of silence among the police, who can prevent the corruption from coming to light. Officers in these situations commonly fail to report corrupt behaviour or provide false testimony to outside investigators to cover up the criminal activity by their fellow officers. And so the show goes on, and looking at other ancient cultures and the mythology and the patterns of different ethnic backgrounds around the world, this is the sort of thing that has been happening for centuries and is still alive and well today.
Yes, that's right. The cocaine getting moved, the heroin, the three, cannabis, cocaine and heroin, are the main ones. But in Australia, it's the drug ICE. And it's interesting that I have alleged, a lot of the time it's the police that have been turning this blind eye, and in the word police has ICE.
You never know. There you go. Now, that's a pattern for another day, but we will come back to this. We're going to end this episode now, and please add us to your podcast platform. We are Whistleblowers. Jennifer, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'll let you get back to the computer and keep on investigating. We might do another episode on organised crime at a local level, New South Wales Police, because there's a lot of information on that. But thanks for joining us today for podcasts, and we'll see you next time.